It's ugly now. It's going to get uglier.
It's going to get uglier? Wait a minute, bro.
Whoa, what do you mean?
What? It's going to get uglier this season?
No, it don't
get... Are we talking missing the playoffs ugly? Are we talking about locker room?
Yeah, like what?
It's the future!
Down and distance.
On WGNRadio.com.
It's confusing and frustrating at the same time because we have a lot way more talent than we did the year we went to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think. We just had guys back then that played for each other and willing to do whatever it takes and have fun playing the game. And we got good guys. We all the thing about it, we all get along with each other. Sometimes you need a lot more than just having a life for each other. You got to just really deep down love each other and play hard, knowing that guy's going to battle for you. Like I said before, we got a lot of talent in this room. We won games without that much talent. So I think it's just mental. It's really mental now at this point.
Welcome back to Down and Distance. I'm Sean Davis right here, WGNRadio.com, with my guy, the man, the myth, the legend, Jared Payton, at PaytonSon on Twitter. Chicago Bulls, free-falling right now in the NBA. A game and a half away from being out of the playoffs. A lot of stuff going on surrounding general soreness. I never thought soreness would be a big issue here in the city of Chicago. Derrick Rose is at the front once again with his injuries and missing games. Gar Foreman, is he on the hot seat? We're getting ready to go into it right now. We have on the line, friend of the program, Brian Crawford. You hear him here all the time on Down and Distance. Right now, he has an article up on Hoop Magazine. It's a great article talking about the ways to fix the Chicago Bulls right now. BC, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? How y'all doing?
Man, we're doing wonderful. Great article. I'm going to get right into it. The rumors that have been swirling in Chicago. Gar Foreman has been making calls, trying to pretty much put out a fire that is the blame of his decisions going back to the summer when he wanted to get rid of Tom Thibodeau. And I think everybody thought that was a crazy proposition at that time. And then it actually happened. We were even more shocked. But just talk about what you've been hearing and what the rumors consist of.
I mean, basically the rumors, I mean, you know, if you believe them to be true, that he's been calling around to, you know, other teams in the league or, you know, to anybody who would listen, basically saying that, you know, the Bulls' struggles this season aren't his fault, you know, and that's pretty much, I mean, you could look at it as damage control or you could look at it as angling for another job. You know, either way, like I said, if you believe that stuff, you know, and believe that it's true, then that can only mean one thing, that, you know, Gar Foreman is basically on his way out, you know, because of the decisions that he's made to fire Tom Thibodeau, you know, use those draft picks to get Doug McDermott, where they could have had any number of guys like, you know, Gary Harris and Jokic in Denver. They could even have Rodney Hood, who's out in Utah right now. And, you know, one thing I've always admired about Gar was his ability to identify talent and build a team that was competitive, you know, I mean, and that's kind of played itself out over the years. But within the last year, you know, it was almost like a nepotism situation. You know, we got to get Tom Thibodeau out of here so I can get my guy Hoiberg in there, you know, another dude from Ames. You know, you drafted Doug McDermott, another dude from Ames. And we all know how deep, Foreman's ties are to, you know, state of Iowa, the Iowa State program, the city of Ames, and things like that. So, you know, looking back on it, it was all sketchy to begin with. And, you know, even though the narrative train was rolling, basically saying that Tibbs needed to go because of minutes and guys getting hurt and everything like that, I've always been on the side of it. You know, that's stupid. Like, you don't just fire a guy who is, you know, you don't fire a guy who's basically won you no less than 45 games and, you know, in a situation where he's been without his best players for almost the entire time that he was there. That's just dumb. So you don't do stuff like that. But that's the move they made, and, you know, we see what's happening now.
It's funny, BC, you start looking at it. And the one thing I love about your article is it's right off the jump. You talk about Media Day was the first sign that something was wrong with this club and with everything that was going on. And I think most people on the outside looking in kind of felt the same way. I know I felt that way.
I mean, media day was empty, man. And you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, it should have been packed. Like, it should have been a ton of people in there. You know, you basically reveal, you know, you're unveiling a brand new coach who was supposed to come in with this new offensive philosophy that was supposed to revive Derrick Rose, make Jimmy Butler better. You know, he was going to embrace analytics, which was something else that, you know, fans were clamoring for. You know, you got this brand new flashy facility, and nobody was there. Like, it was empty, man. Like, it was just nothing to it. It was almost like people kind of knew that there were no expectations coming from this team, and the expectations that, you know, Gar Forman has set forth about them being a contender and everything like that. Media day showed that nobody bought that. Like, nobody believed it. And now, you know, now you see what's happening. You know, this team is bad, you know, and now Jimmy is going to be out for 4 weeks. You know, you talked about Derek, you know, sitting out with general soreness, whatever that means. You know what I'm saying? You got Lou Cannella's going on TV basically saying that, you know, somebody needs to step up. You know, and he went to Derek. It's just, it's such a messy situation. But the root of it is all of the moves that has been transpired through the front office.
You said that. I want to get at that Lou Cannella's piece. I think it was about a minute-long rant on Fox 32 where he pretty much talked about everybody in the NBA is sore right now. You can blame the PR department. You can say the Bulls, you know, allow Derek to answer the question when he shouldn't have been put in that position. I know for a fact that Derek probably should not have played in Denver, but did end up playing based upon the fact that they were down and Jimmy was actually hurt. And it came to the fact they played back-to-back games, Denver and Minnesota, on consecutive nights. And he didn't look good after the workout. And from all we've heard, the staff, along with Hoiberg, decided that they needed to let him sit the game out. With that being said, you move forward. One of the things you talked about in the article that could fix this thing is moving Fred Hoiberg up to the main office or to the GM position and then going out and getting somebody like a Luke Walton. Now, knowing Chicago fans the way we know them, BC, you know the question is going to come. How much credit can you give to Luke Walton? All he did was throw the balls out. Anybody can coach Clay, Draymond, and Steph Curry. How would you answer that?
I would answer that by telling them, look at Fred Hoiberg. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the exact same situation. You got a team that came off of 50 wins the season prior. That's basically the same. The only addition that they, you know, the only addition that they added was the rookie in Bobby Portis. But the same team won 50 games. And now, you know, they look like they might, if they get to 40, it would be lucky. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. you can't discount what Luke Walton has done because he wasn't the head coach, you know, and that could have gone either way. Yeah, we know Steph is good. Yeah, we know Clay is good. Yeah, we know Draymond is good. But you still need a coach. You can't just roll the balls out there and tell guys just to go hoop and, you know, win these games. You can't do that. You know, he still has to reinforce some things. He still has to work players out. He still has to coach them. And they still have to listen to him. You know, there's a lot of things going on there that I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, it's not – yes, you need talent. Yes, you need talent in players. But I've always been of the opinion that the coach matters. The coach matters a lot. You know, and the coach not only has to be somebody that the players respect, but he has to be a leader of men too, because that's the only way that they're going to buy in. If you're none of those things, and particularly talking about the Chicago Bulls, a team that, you know, that's basically been raised under Tibbs. You know what I'm saying? These are basically a pack of pit bulls. And now you got a, you know, and now you got a guy who's a kitten coming in trying to coach him. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just, those two things just don't add up. And I just don't, you know, and I think these are the things that fans, you know, the average fan just don't really think about that they should. Instead of just listening to these, you know, media reports and talking heads on TV, look at what's going on in front of you and think about it and, you know, decide for yourself if it makes sense or not.
And I think that's clearly been shown in all of the fourth quarter collapses with no defensive identity coming down the stretch and then the lack of offensive execution down the stretch. The Bulls have had about 10 games that you can honestly say, look, that's a game they should have won.
Yes.
That's a game they should have won.
BC, you look at – I'm with you, BC. When you talk about coaching, to me, it's a big deal. Playing sports, I look at just past teams that I was on and what we would have done if certain coaches would have been around. I would have had a chance to be on teams and win more championships. So don't just say having great players is great, but somebody to be able to steer those guys in the right direction, and for those guys to be able to trust him is huge. But with Tibbs, this team had an identity. Regardless if people liked it or not, they had an identity. They were going to play hard. It didn't matter who was on the court. They were going to play hard, and that was something that you were used to seeing. Listen to Taj Gibson in his quotes and his comments the other day about how this team used to be
soft.
He said, basically came out and said they soft like wet newspaper. And they used to be scrappy. They soft now, offensive minded. Everybody's looking for the three now, trying to score. This team has no identity now, bro.
JP, you play sports, at the highest level, college and the pros, and you know better than anybody. Teams take on the identity of their coaches, period, point blank, top to bottom, because that guy comes in and he reinforces his philosophy. He holds everyone accountable, and that's what players respond to. If you a guy like Tibbs who came in and, basically put his foot down to put his stamp on the team from the gate and won 60 games, and then, you remove the best player from that situation for 4 years and they still don't falter, that is because of that particular head coach. No other reason. So, you got a guy like Fred Hoiberg, and, it's one of those situations where people were actually convinced, this is the same team. All we need to do is bring in a new guy, and he's going to come in, and, these guys are going to get better. Nah, it didn't work like that. Because, one, they got to respect you. Two, they got to believe in you. And three, they got to buy what you're selling. And if none of those things play out, you're going to have a situation like we got right now in Chicago where, if your best player, Jimmy Butler, is basically saying that they need to be coached hard. And then you got one of your hardest workers in Taj Gibson saying that the team is soft. That's a problem. And that, and that's just a direct reflection of the coach. Look, man, I was there during the Vinny Del Negro era, right? And it doesn't take long to figure out whether a guy can coach or not. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't take long. Like, give it a few games, 40, 50 games in, and you'll be able to see what kind of coach you have, and you'll be able to kind of predict how good a team will, team will be. And I know I'm probably the only person in Chicago that's really holding Fred Hoiberg's feet to the fire. And I know a lot of people probably aren't doing it because this is his first year and they don't want to be, they don't want to throw him under the bus right away or be rude or anything like that. But I just don't think he's a good coach. And I don't think that if you get him an entire roster of players, that they're going to be better than what he has now. I just don't believe it.
BC, that was the contradiction from the Lou Kanellis rant that I didn't understand. Like, you get on Derek, but at the same time, 20 seconds later, you want to give praise to Tom Thibodeau for being able to win without his players and not letting his team feel like they're defeated before tip-off, but then you want to lament Derek not playing the game and give Fred Hoiberg a pass for not being able to do the same thing. When one of the things every coach has to do, it's not exclusive to Tom Thibodeau, every coach has to be able to get his team motivated and ready to play no matter who's on the court.
I mean, like I said, man, I'm the only person in Chicago right now in year one that's calling out Fred Hoiberg. And I know right now it's Gar Pax, and, that's the sexy story. That's the story everybody wants to read, even though Gar probably should have been out of there maybe last year, the year before, but now everybody is kind of shining the spotlight on him. And Fred's turn is going to come. Believe that. It's going to come.
He's like Tessio and the Godfather right now.
Right now, yeah.
He's about to get led off.
Oh, it's going to come. It's going to come. And, and when it does, I don't dislike him as a person. I don't know him as a person, just from what I've seen and experienced and been around, I think he's a great guy. But at the same time, I'm not even – if you can't coach a team of pit bulls if you can't coach them up to have a competitive team, when the media fire in Chicago get on you, you're not going to be able to handle that, dude.
Yeah.
Like, not at all. So this is – it's ugly now. It's going to get uglier.
It's going to get uglier? Wait a minute, bro.
Whoa, what do you mean? What?
It's going to get uglier this season?
No, it'll
are we
get,
talking
no,
like I, missing the playoffs ugly? Are we talking about locker room?
Yeah, like what ugly? What, tell me.
Listen, man. Look, this is the second time that they've gone from the top of the Eastern Conference standings to basically near the bottom, right? And you've got Jimmy Butler, who's going to be out for at least a month.
Yeah.
3 to 4 weeks, at least a month. Okay. So that means, you know, so that means you're basically relying on Derrick Rose, who hasn't really shown that he could kind of, you know, carry that mantle again. So we're talking about a situation where in 4 weeks, they could be out of the playoff picture completely. Like, there's a strong chance, and I'd hate to see it happen, but there's a strong chance that this team could miss the playoffs. I truly believe that because I just don't think that Fred Hoiberg is a good coach. I don't think he's good enough to be able to coach through adversity like this. I think he needs everything in place. I think he needs all of his pieces. I think he needs all of his players just to have a chance. And without that, I don't think he's good enough.
He sounds like Larry Coker, your old coach, JP.
I'm telling you, it sounds
like Larry Coker.
It sounds like
Miami,
like a bad. Things are just going to get worse. I mean,
yeah,
it's crazy though because I mean, I don't know. There was a lot
Listen,
people were as much as people were upset. There was people that were on the fence. It was hard for me to sit back and just accept Fred Hoiberg. After not having Tom Thibodeau. And I'm all up for change, and I get that. But to me, you have to have a little bit of a resume. Everybody's like, well, you know, first time your head coaches have had success. But yeah, but other dudes have a little bit more juice than Fred had. Fred didn't really have no juice,
look,
even though he played in the league.
He had
no juice.
I was that guy that tried to be neutral. But BC, me and him went at it. I'm talking about we went at it. Several times, I said, look, Fred can walk out with the talent he has in the Eastern Conference and win 50 games. Like, come on, man. BC was like, no, bro. It's not happening. And he was being generous when he said 45. He was
being generous.
We're looking at a
y'all
team.
Know,
is he worse than Vinny Del Negro?
He might be.
That's scary.
Look, and y'all know that I don't care what nobody think about nothing that I have to say, but I will go on record today on this show because nobody has said it yet. I will go on record and say right now at this point, Fred Hoiberg was a bad hire, a very bad hire.
Now, let me ask you this question. With everything you put out in your article to say this is how you fix the Bulls, it's very interesting on the West Coast trip, Michael Reinsdorf was very present. You saw him watching the games. If anybody's going to get to Jerry Reinsdorf's ear, is it going to be more of John Paxson, or will it be Michael Reinsdorf going back to Jerry saying, look, I think it's time to move on from Gar, or I think we need to do this, or we think we need to do that? Like, where's the influence coming from?
I mean, I don't think Mike really has to consult with his father too much because he kind of basically handed him the keys to the franchise, and, you know, he's kind of giving him the autonomy to make, you know, certain decisions and things like that. But I also think that, you know, like I said, everybody wants to give Fred Hoiberg a chance, and I get that, which is why he was on that trip with Gar Foreman. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's not a good sign when your boss comes on the job with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not a good thing. So this is why the seat for Foreman is so hot right now. What was it, last week on the cover of the Sun-Times? They basically just called it like, yo, you got to go. That was on the front page of the sports section. So that's, you know, that's a big thing. So, you know, it's like, you know, it's Fred is kind of in a, you know, he's kind of in a safe situation because he is a first-year head coach. But look, man, we've already seen David Black get whacked, and he was winning.
Right.
In year two. We just seen Derek Fisher get whacked in year two, and the Knicks were bad. Fred don't have that much time around here, man, especially if they miss the playoffs.
How many games are they better if Tibbs is coaching right now?
Fred probably at 35 right about now with Tibbs.
That's crazy. 10 games better almost.
Yeah, almost 10 games better.
All right, since College Dropout dropped, where were you when it dropped?
Oh, that was not when College Dropout came out. I was here in Chicago. I was a huge, huge, huge Kanye West fan. Like, I just, you know, just as a producer, you know what I'm saying? You know, as a rapper, I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was great. I thought the album was very well put together. You know, it showed the kind of talent that he has. And it's kind of crazy to even think that the album is 10 years old. Like, I listened to it, like, nonstop. And, you know, I guess the that is that, you know, we found out how talented, you know, Kanye is as an artist and as a producer. And then the curse, it is, you know, 10 years later, the dude is a nut job.
Do you, what's your perspective on it now? Is it different than when you first heard it in 2004?
Not really. You know, I still think it's pretty good. I'll be honest, I hadn't heard it in a long time. I'll probably listen to it today. But, I mean, I think that particular piece of music stands the test of time. Like, you can still listen to it, regardless of, you know, whether you like Kanye or not. You know, that was his first album, and it wasn't a flop. It was very, very good.
Yeah.
You know, he's had some, you know, some suspect albums that have come out since then. Before his first project, you could tell, like, he was really and truly, like, passionate about letting people know that not only he was serious about, you know, being a rapper, but he was also serious about, you know, just being a total artist. So, you know, from that respect, I appreciated it.
Your top three songs off the album?
Man. Get 'em High. Mm. What's the song with Selena Johnson?
Off All Down.
And that last song where he basically told the story of how he got signed to Rockefeller. You know, mayonnaise colored beers look like Miracle Whip or something like that. I thought that was dope.
Right. That's what's up, man. Brian Crawford, you can follow him at Mr. Craw4D on Twitter right now. Great article up. You can find it on Facebook. Follow him on Facebook at Brian Crawford. That's Brian with a Y, not an I. Friend of the program. Always a pleasure to have you on Down the Distance, bro. Got to get you back in the studio soon. And hopefully this thing won't turn out as bad as you've predicted.
Man, you know, I hate being right, and I hate being I told you so, but I don't know, man. I don't have no faith, so we'll see. Hopefully things get turned around, though.
What's the chances that Luke Walton ends up in New York, in your opinion?
Ooh, that's a good one, man. You know, coming, you know, being a field disciple, it might be, you know, that might play a part in it, but it might be difficult if Phil is truly married to the triangle like everybody thinks, so... I don't know, man. I probably give it a 50-50 chance with Walton right now. You know, I think a lot of people has him as the front runner for, you know, the Lakers head coaching job. But, you know, he's going to be one of those guys, man, that everybody's going to be after. So he could basically, you know, write his own ticket at this point. It's a good position to be in if you're him.
Brian Crawford, once again, ladies and gentlemen, go follow him right now on Twitter at Mr. Craw4D. It's Down the Distance. I'm your guy, Sean Davis, JP. Get at us at Dad Pod on Twitter. We'll be back.